Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is comedian and attorney Elliot Glicksman. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our new Two Jewish maven on Israel, Amir Eden, and our Shinshinim, Chen Denachi and Tamir Shakuri. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. After a week of unleavened food that ended either Friday night or Saturday night, depending on whether you're Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox, and living in Israel or outside of it, Passover's now absolutely over. As I returned my home kitchen to its year-round chametz status, I discovered, as I do every year, that I had boxes of uneaten matzah. You know, you buy the 5-pound containers of boxes of matzah because it's a better deal. You need a couple of boxes for the Seder anyway, and then you end up with 2 boxes left at the end of Pesach, just when you really don't want to see matzah again for a very long time. So what to do? How do you use up all those boxes of the unleavened bread of intestinal affliction? I've often suggested that if we burn chametz just before we begin Passover, we should therefore burn matzah after Passover, but the idea has not caught on. So instead, to play us in this morning in her now classic song, Pass to Jewish guest Michelle Citrin tells you 20 things you can do with matzah after Passover's over.
Passover's over, and wouldn't it be neat if you could use all the matzah that you didn't eat? Catch it like a frisbee with your friends in the park, or you could jump in the water and pretend you're a shark. You can make a matzah pick and play the guitar, and you can make a matzah license plate for your car. Use it as a coaster when you're drinking your beer, or you can throw it as confetti for a happy new year.
Insulate.
Decorate.
9. Exfoliate.
10.
Constipate.
Passover's over, and wouldn't it be neat if you could use all the matzah that you didn't eat? Crumble up some matzah to line your hamster cage, or you can use it as a bookmark to hold your page. Break a stack of matzah when you practice your karate. Build a matzah doghouse for your doggy named Scotty. Make a little matzah board and wave it goodbye. Or you can make a pair of matzah wings and learn how to fly. Wear some matzah jewelry. Make a picture frame for me. Have a drink of matzah tea. Matzah's all that I can see. There's just one more thing to do with unleavened bread. You can eat it, 'cause it ain't all that bad.
That was Michelle Citrin's 20 things to do with matzah after Passover's over. Okay, Passover's over, which means that we are now in the period of counting the Omer, the time between Pesach, the festival of freedom, and Shavuot, the holiday of covenant in Torah. In these 7 weeks between Passover and Shavuos, we take a few moments every evening to say a blessing and count the days that lead us towards a reaffirmation of our brit, our covenant with God, as certified on Mount Sinai. As the passage in Proverbs says, teach us to count our days so that we can make each day count. The counting of the Omer reminds us we have the capacity to make every single day matter, to bring holiness into our lives every day. In the Sfirata Omer, the prayer we chant each night, there's a famous passage. Sheyabona Beis HaMikdash, may the temple be rebuilt speedily in our day. It's a classic text, but more than that, it's a metaphor for what we wish in our own lives at this time of year. May we continually seek to rebuild ourselves. If we can do that, we can rebuild our world. Sheyabona Beis HaMikdash, as sung by the great cantor Ben Sion Miller.
Sheyabona Beis HaMikdash, imeru ve'yomenu, v'sein chelkenu besorosecho. Sheyabona Beis HaMikdash, imeru ve'yomenu, yehir
Sheyabona Beis HaMikdash, written by Israel Shore, a classic concert piece sung by Chazan Ben Sion Miller. For the period of the counting of the Omer, the agriculturally oriented time of dedication that we have now entered on our Jewish calendars. Our guest this morning, Elliot Glicksman, is both a trial attorney and a comedian. Find out how that works and meet him when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning. Elliot Glicksman is a trial lawyer and a comedian. That does not seem like the most fertile marriage of roles.
Well, to some it seems redundant, actually, being a lawyer and a comedian. But I'm very comfortable being in front of people, and it seemed like a natural thing. And probably like many people, I was a class clown, and I was, it was a way to avoid getting beat up because you wouldn't know it to look at me now. I wasn't a very big kid. I got pushed around. I tried to look tough. I'd put a...
The small Jewish kid.
Put a toothpick in my mouth to look tough, and I didn't look tough. I looked like an appetizer. it just didn't help me, So being funny and making fun of myself was a good way to kind of deflect.
Do you think comedians are always outsiders?
I don't know about always, but they are wired differently. There's not a lot of really handsome star quarterback types that become comedians. The comedians are the ones who aren't the great athletes, who aren't the most popular. I do think there's some element of that.
What's your favorite part about comedy?
You know what I love about it? Well, I love a lot of things about it. I love crafting a good joke and having a misdirection. A lot of it's misdirection, I've found. But what I really love about it is just the time I'm on stage. Because there was a time I'd go on the road and work, and I hated everything about it. And back then there was smoking in bars, and you'd sit in a bar all night, and you'd smell like smoke, and it was awful. But then, you know, for that few moments on stage, I could be talking to you, Rabbi, off stage. We can be having a conversation. It's time for me to go on.
Right.
That's my space. You can't come up there. And I love that.
You know, people talk about stand-up comedy as the most terrifying thing you can do. It seems like it's the opposite for you.
And maybe part of it is there was not a lot of pressure on me. It wasn't. There was a time I thought about it being my livelihood, but it was always just sort of a fun thing to do. And if I mean, we all bomb. If you're going to try new things, you're going to bomb. And I've had my wife say to me, oh, don't do that joke. That's not funny. And I, of course, that makes me want to do it. But I've opened for the Little River Band in 1982 and got booed off the stage by 2,500 people. They booed from the moment they were expecting a musical opening act that canceled at the last minute.
Right.
I got booed for 30 minutes, and I had to do my 30 minutes.
Boy, that's like my worst sermon ever. I mean,
is that right?
Yeah, no.
They actually would boo. No, but I think it's not terrifying for me because I always had a day job and I always had a really supportive wife when I was doing it. It was just something to try. I'm doing a ballet. I'm in a ballet.
You're in a ballet.
On April 8th. I can't dance. I'm not coordinated. I can't chew gum while you walk. I can't. This is so out of my element. But it's like it's sort of out of my. That's why I sort of like it. It's out of my comfort zone.
What a great way to explore it. We will talk much more with Elliot Glicksman about comedy in particular and Jewish comedy and comedy for charity when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, Kvetch or Kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine. We're approaching the 70th birthday of the State of Israel, and as part of our build-up to this huge celebration, for the next few weeks, Too Jewish will include spots from both our Israeli Shin Shinim and our Maven on Israel. We welcome our Maven on Israel, Amir Eden, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Amir.
Boker Tov.
So, Pesach is past, Mamuna is over. It's time to focus on the 70th birthday of Israel, this huge celebration. What does it mean to you, and what can we begin to expect as we get a couple weeks from now?
Right. So, Israel independence, Yom Ha'atzmaut, obviously a holiday, a very important day for all of us. Can imagine, the world without Israel today. And the festival, which will be held on Sunday, April 22nd, from 1 to 6 on our campus, has really a lot of surprises this year. One of them is the Pavilion of Technology, Israeli Innovation, which we are very proud of. And what it's a showcase, and we're showing the beautiful things that came out and are coming out from Israel to better our world, Tikkun Olam.
You know, Israel's startup nation got a lot of press for a while. It's not like it stopped when everybody was talking about it 10 years ago. In fact, Israel is at the forefront of technology in so many areas. Can you talk about a couple of those areas in which Israeli technology has kind of taken the lead?
Sure. So, first of all, Israel is dealing with challenges, for example, water. And this is a worldwide challenge. So,
a shortage of drinking water, shortage
correct,
of fresh water.
Correct, fresh water, clean water, yes. So, therefore, I know that Israeli team came together, and what they're doing is they have a machine that takes out water from air. So that's something that you can do, in third world countries. There are billions of people who don't have clean air, fresh air. So now they'll have the ability.
So they'll have fresh water taken
correct.
From the moisture in the
yes,
air.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I think many of us are familiar with the giant desalination plants Israel has created, which have reversed the Israeli dependence on very fickle water supplies.
Right.
But boy, to take water out of the air.
Yeah, the name of the company is Watergan, and they will be represented at our festival. So that's one.
Fantastic.
And then there's another one, which is Orcam. And Orcam is a company that came out with goggles, smart goggles, that it's like optical engineering. So blind people or people with that are impaired, vision
macular
impaired,
degeneration or other kinds of visual impairments.
All you have to do is point with your finger an object, and then the goggles will read it out loud to you. So, for example, a blind person can sit in a restaurant and point at a menu and know what they want to order. They can be outside and point at a street name.
So it's a reader.
Yes, it's a reader.
It's an audio reader, and just by pointing.
Yes.
What an incredible world we live in.
Right.
And so this will also be, people can see that and experience that.
Actually, with the goggles, they'll be there.
Wow.
We have a local student who is going to fly to LA, be trained by the company, and then bring back those goggles.
And demo the goggles for people. Yeah, you can put them on the audience, and see. Yeah. Wow. Fantastic. I'm sure there's going to be a wealth of other technology.
13 companies. Yes.
Fantastic. And Israel at the forefront of all of this, part of the big celebration of Israel's 70th birthday coming up 2 weeks from today.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Amir. We'll talk next week.
Toda.
We welcome our Shin Shinim here on Too Jewish, Tamish Kuri and Chen Dinachi. We've just finished Pesach, and perhaps the greatest celebration of the end of Pesach ever invented, well, not perhaps, definitely, is the Mumuna, the wonderful Moroccan festival, which we did here in Tucson for a while, sometimes more successful than others. In Israel, it's a huge deal. Tell us a little bit about your experience of Mumuna and why it's not just for Moroccans.
So Chen and I are both Moroccans, and it's just such a rich culture. And one of the big celebrations of like being a Moroccan is the Mimouna. So in the Mimouna, we have some really cool traditions, and it's actually a really nice story why it happened. So in Morocco, right after Passover, the Arab neighbors that were non-Jewish used to bring flour and like stuff to make the muffletta to the Jews.
Muffletas are those fantastic. They're kind of like pancakes, cross between pancake and a crepe. It's quite delicious.
It's kind of between a crepe and like a pita.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, especially with honey and or Nutella. That's the best.
Nutella, yes, absolutely. That was the tradition in Morocco, I'm sure.
Yeah, that was for sure. So so the Jews would open their homes for
all of their neighbors, everyone,
it's just to start fresh and invite everyone. And it's been like it's been said that in the Mimuna, everyone's invited. You don't get invitations because it's supposed to be open for everyone. So it's a really cool tradition. We do a Mimuna every year. It just depends on which grandma feels like doing it this year or which house is willing to host. And it's really funny how my not Moroccan friends always like, okay, so when is the Mimuna? Who's coming? Like months ahead, they have to know that they have a Mimuna planned because it's such a cool thing to be a part of. That's it.
Now, I mean, there's something to this. If you haven't had any leavening for a week, as many of us haven't, you know, keeping kosher LePesach, there's something fantastic about the first end of Pesach food that you have. But as I understand it, your friends who don't even keep kosher for Pesach still are dying for the muffletas.
First of all, muffletta is a muffletta. It's the best. but also, I think it's
I don't think there's really an American corollary. I mean, the closest might be, you know, I don't know, Krispy Kreme fresh glazed donut when it comes off of the cooker or something. And it's just as healthy for you as those, I might add.
Yeah. I think it's also just about being a part of this cool celebration. It's not only the muffletta. My grandma makes like really nice cookies, kind of like how they make in Moroccan weddings.
Right.
And we have tea and we all sit around the table.
It's
and
a mint
just
tea,
talk.
Right?
Mint tea. And I just think that sitting in a Mimuna, even if you don't eat a muffletta, and you will, it's still a really fun experience.
And all the music and just the whole feeling of like Pesach's over and now we're celebrating.
Yep.
That's a great, great explanation. Chen, your family, it doesn't even really do it, and yet you were saying?
So, yeah, my family, I mean, we don't do it, but then every single Ashkenazi friend I have will be like before Pesach or during, when are you doing the Mimuna? I want to go to a Mimuna with you. Like, it's a thing, like before Pesach or during Pesach, find your Moroccan friend, like in Pesach, all Moroccan kids feel very popular because suddenly everyone wants to be your friend. They just want to get a muffletta.
It's a great explanation. Guys, thanks very much. We will talk next week. We're exploring Israel's 70th anniversary, 70 years, to be biblical, with a new Two Jewish feature, a look at each decade of Israel's existence from 1948 to 2018 through a headline from that year and a signature melody. And so, this morning we continue the process of reviewing the history of the Jewish state, 70 years of Israel in 7 weeks, on to decade four with a headline from 1978. Oh. The 1970s was a complicated decade in Israel's life. It began with a continuation of the undeclared war, the war of attrition that bled on from the end of the 1960s until mid-1970. The ceasefire that ended it and the death of Egyptian dictator Gamal Abdel Nasser that same summer gave Israel a respite from the constant border fighting that continued after the end of the Six-Day War. It also led to a period of confidence in Israel, a mini golden era around the celebration of Israel's 25th birthday in the spring of 1973. The country was growing and developing, full of both the chutzpah of youth and the pride of real accomplishment. The rebuilding of the Jewish quarter of the old city of Jerusalem began. All seemed to be looking up for Israel. Yalda sheli ktana shezot tihye hamilchama ha'achrona ani matiach lach yalda sheli ktana shezot תהיה המלחמה האחרונה. And then in October 1973, on Yom Kippur, Israel was attacked by Egypt and Syria. The devastating surprise attack nearly broke the Israeli army, pushed it back from the Suez Canal and the Golan Heights. Only heroic fighting saved the day until the reserves could be called up. They arrived and turned the course of the war. By the end of nearly 3 weeks of fighting, Israel had won a conclusive military victory on both fronts, driven the Syrians back to Damascus, and surrounded the Egyptian army, but at a great cost. The ultimate resolution of the Yom Kippur War a few years later surprised everyone. Our headline for this morning comes from the fall of 1977, just short of 40 years ago now. On November 19th, 1977, Egyptian President Anwar Sadat stunningly became the first and so far only Arab leader to visit Israel and address the Knesset with a call for peace. His plane landing in Israel seemed surreal, as was his being welcomed by Prime Minister Menachem Begin and Foreign Minister Shimon Peres. On the next day after he arrived, he addressed the Israeli Knesset with a message that helped lead directly to the Camp David Accords of 1978. And that peace treaty has been maintained through every potential strain for four decades. Sadat and Begin received the Nobel Peace Prize for the treaty, finally signed in 1979. Sadat was assassinated in 1981, but Hosni Mubarak continued the diplomatic, peaceful relationship between Egypt and Israel. It has often been a cold peace, but still, always, peace. Sadat's words, written in the guestbook at Yad Vashem on that visit nearly 40 years ago, read, "May God guide our steps towards peace. Let us end all suffering for mankind." Our song from the 1970s, also by Naomi Shemer, as was the song from the 60s, it's her version of the Beatles' Let It Be, "Lu Yehi," as sung by Chava Alberstein.
Od yesh mifras lavan ba'ofek mul anan shachor kaved. כל שנבקש לו יהי ואם בחלונות הערב אור נרות החג רועד כל שנבקש לו יהי לו יהי אנא לו יהי כל שנבקש
That was our fourth weekly Two Jewish Celebrations, 70 Years of Israel in 7 weeks, a memory from the headlines of 1977, 78, and 79, the decade of the 1970s. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, in a little while you're going to Paris, there was a story that came out of France recently that sort of didn't make the American press, kind of a terrible story. Would you share that?
Yeah, it was a gruesome, very sad story about an elderly Jewish lady somewhere in her 80s who, in the 40s, when the Nazis occupied Paris, somehow miraculously escaped the big roundup for the deportation of Jews and was living in the 11th arrondissement of Paris, which is, you know, a perfectly nice neighborhood. And she was a widow, so she was living alone but self-sufficient. And recently, two young thugs broke into her apartment, apparently for reasons of anti-Semitism. Apparently this was really a hate crime, according to French investigators and first indications. You know, the truth may be otherwise. But they not only stabbed her multiple times and killed her, they then burned her apartment down. So she died in flames, probably from the stab wounds, but in any case, she was burned to death all these years after the Holocaust. And French foreign minister was in Israel when he heard this news, and he had just visited Yad Vashem. So he was really overcome by the emotions. The French president, Emmanuel Macron, has pledged to eliminate anti-Semitism, racism, homophobia, all those things. It's high on his agenda. So he said that this renews his commitment to his own agenda, and he finds it horrifying that in modern Paris, such a thing could happen. Meanwhile, you know, one of my many reactions to this is that among the American Jewish community, it's become a commonplace to believe that the French are particularly anti-Semitic, virulently so, whatever. And I think part of that equation depends on how you define French. Early indications are that the people who perpetrated this horrible crime were, in fact, North African Muslims. And the French don't really consider any of the North Africans from their former colonies, whether it's Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, right, to be French. They consider them to be North Africans living in France. They do have a significant impact on elections in two senses. One, they tend to vote left for social benefits. But two, they drive a lot of voters to the far right, which is a party that wants to get rid of immigrants. And, you know, there are certain unmissable parallels between France and the United States at the current time. And this story kind of reinforces the horror that most people look away from because we're preoccupied with Stormy Daniels, et cetera, with more juicy and salacious stuff, which is that anti-Semitic incidents and particularly violent incidents of anti-Semitism are at a higher level now than they've been at any time since the 1930s, right here at home, not only in France.
Well, that's true. Although I will say that the anti-Semitic incidents in America that have tracked so high do not tend to be violent ones, based on the latest data. But a tragic and sad story from France, and one that somehow did not make most of the press here. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Two Jewish as a public service. A little leftover Passover humor. During a trip to London, I became friends with a wealthy yet modest Jewish guy named Hyman Goldfarb. Hyman told me his donations to charities through the years led the Queen to offer him a knighthood, but he was going to turn it down. "But that's a great honor," I said, "Hyman. Why would you turn it down?" "Well," he said, "because during the ceremony you have to say something in Latin, and I don't know any Latin." "Oh," I said, "so say something in Hebrew. The Queen won't know the difference." "Brilliant," Hyman exclaimed, "but what should I say?" Well, remember the question the son asks the father at the Pesach Seder? Can you say that in Hebrew? Of course, he said, Manish Tanaha Laila Hazeh. Thank you, old sport. I shall become a knight. At the ceremony, Hyman waited while other honorees went before the queen, had a sword put on their shoulders, said the Latin, and were knighted. Finally, they called, Hyman Goldfarb, approach your sovereign. Hyman knelt before the queen. She placed her sword on one shoulder and then the other and motioned for Hyman to speak. And out came, Manish Tanah Halayla Hazeh. The queen turned to her aide and said, why is this knight different from all the other knights? You see, that's what Manish Tanah Halayla... never mind. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Two Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the double portion of Tazria Metzora in the book of Leviticus, and a wholly unappetizing set of portions it is. Metzora in particular focuses on the question of leprosy, a dread disease of the ancient world. It's true, leprosy was awful and needed to be eliminated, if at all possible, in particular by using the concept of quarantine to isolate people who had it. But exploring what our ancestors believed to be an infectious disease at great length in a Shabbat service can scarcely be called a spiritually meaningful experience. The rabbis of our tradition recognized the problem long ago and came up with an ingenious and meaningful reinterpretation. The word metzorah, which means leprosy, was itself, they said, an abbreviation for the term in Hebrew motzi shem ra, which means slander or evil speech. Their interpretation was based on evidence in the Torah itself. Moses' hand became leprous when he expressed doubt about the willingness of the people to believe in his mission, while Miriam was struck by leprosy when she spoke against Moses. The leper was a person who spoke badly of others. Evil speech, Lashon Hara, and its even darker partner, Motzi Shem Ra, slander, were considered by the sages to be among the worst sins of all. What needed to be eliminated from society was not just the biological illness of leprosy, but these terrible infections of slander and gossip. The ways in which we employ language lead to many of the worst problems in society. Maimonides taught that Lashon Hara is not only a terrible epidemic disease, but a multiple murderer, killing three people. The one who shares the gossip, the one who hears the gossip, and the one who is the subject of gossip. According to Jewish law, even gossip that has a kernel of truth within it is Lashon Hara, and inherently wrong, causing intense societal damage. Some authorities, such as the great rabbi known as the Chafetz Chaim, go so far as to say that even gossiping about the truth is morally heinous. There is an interesting parallel in our own American law code. The legal concept in the United States jurisprudence is called fruit of the poisoned tree, which rules that the use of evidence collected improperly must be excluded. That is, any discovery gathered in such a way is tainted and not legally admissible. So it is with Metzora and other forms of Lashon Hara. Evil speech, whether the gossip has elements of truth in it or not, it is derived from a fundamentally corrupt source. Our goal in life should be to completely eliminate the habit of Motzi Shem Ra, the awful tendency we have to speak badly of others. The rabbis teach that if you commit no slander, your life will become clear of moral illness. By purifying our speech of words that damage others, we can find our way clear to living better, holier lives. Our portion this week even delineates forms of metzora that affect the very houses in which we live, metzora ad bayit. If a house is badly enough infected with this leprosy of the property, it may even need to be destroyed. It's along the lines of Abraham Lincoln's concept that a house divided against itself cannot stand. If we wish to have not only personal lives, but organizations, synagogues, communities in which holiness flourishes, the dreadful sin of slander must be eliminated. May we each do our part now and always to remove metzora, personal impurities of speech, from our lives, our institutions, and our community. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Elliot Glicksman, will tell his favorite Jewish joke and explain how he figures out what's funny and what isn't. and share why Comedy for Charity is a valuable part of our community and any community. Find out when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
After a chaotic week of seesaw declarations and actions about deporting African migrants from Israel, the Israeli government released 58 African asylum seekers held in a detention center after a plan to deport over 200 more of them to Rwanda fell through. Israel announced this release during Pesach last week. It will now try to renegotiate a deal with Uganda, it says, even though the African country does not want to accept the migrants. We will insist that the airlines return the asylum seekers to the country where they came from, Uganda's Foreign Affairs Minister, Henry Okello Oryem, said. We do not have a contract, any understanding, formal or informal, with Israel for them to dump their refugees here. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu had brokered a deal with the UN High Commission for Refugees to allow thousands of migrants to stay in Israel and to resettle thousands of others in Western countries like Germany or Canada. He suddenly froze the deal last week, just hours after announcing and praising it, and officially canceled it the next day, inexplicably blaming an apparently unrelated non-governmental organization, the New Israel Fund. Israel originally had offered any migrant who decided to leave Israel $3,500 and a plane ticket to Rwanda. Up to 40,000 African asylum seekers remain in Israel, their fate still undecided. Who knows what next week will bring? In Hollywood, more than 50 entertainment industry executives signed a letter in support of Netflix after the BDS movement, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions groups working against Israel, threatened a lawsuit over Netflix distribution of the Israeli drama series Fauda. Fauda is a show that focuses on a commando unit of the Israeli Defense Forces whose members embed themselves in the Palestinian community, gathering intelligence and preventing terror attacks. Fauda is an Arabic word meaning chaos. The show incorporates both Arabic and Hebrew dialogue and some English. It airs on Netflix with English subtitles. Netflix is set to release a second season of the series next month. I have watched the first season of Fauda on the recommendation of our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, and it is an incredible, intense series that shows both sides of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in painfully realistic ways. Everyone should see it. The letter supporting this show, sent to Netflix's Ted Sarandos, chief content creator, and Peter Friedlander, vice president of original series at Netflix, praised Fauda for presenting a nuanced portrayal of issues related to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It also said the show mirrors the power of the arts in general. They bring up difficult but important conversations, expanding our horizons and allowing us to experience different points of view. Among the executives who signed the letter were Rick Rosen, head of television at WME, Marty Adelstein, the CEO of Tomorrow Studios, Gary Ginsberg, executive vice president of corporate marketing and communications at Time Warner, Jody Gerson, chairman and CEO of Universal Music Publishing Group, and many others. The BDS movement is trying to force Netflix to stop producing the third season of the show, not release its second season, and remove the first season. It's an effort to censor a great show that demonstrates the humanity and abuse both of Hamas and the Israeli forces deployed against them. It's yet another example of the inability of the BDS movement to begin to understand the reality of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and to fail to see that shows like Fauda are part of the solution, not the problem. And in happier news, Bruce Springsteen's longtime guitarist Nils Lofgren found himself in trouble last week. Hours before a sold-out solo show in Dallas, he discovered four vintage guitars had been stolen. Lofgren, who has also toured with Neil Young and Ringo Starr, was devastated by the robbery, but promised fans the show would go on. Thankfully, the search for replacement acts didn't take long. Lofgren remembered his old friend Howard Queller, now a doctor, formerly Lofgren's bandmate in middle school, lives in North Texas. A little over two decades ago, Lofgren gave Queller's son Ben a guitar for his bar mitzvah. Ben Queller, a noted indie rocker himself now, was more than happy to let Nils Lofgren borrow his old bar mitzvah gift. Nils knows that guitar. He's played it before. Howard Queller said he's the ultimate performer. I know it'll be an amazing show. Ben Queller said his family was the only Jewish one in Greenville, Texas, where he grew up. He became friends with his local rabbi. Being a Jew in a small town helped me form my identity. He said, I am proud to be Jewish. In the end, Lofgren's guitars were found by police just a few days after he played the bar mitzvah gift guitar successfully in the concert. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Elliot Glicksman, is a lawyer and a comedian doing comedy for charity soon. So we talked just a little bit about comedy, but tell us about Jewish comedy. You said you don't do that much Jewish comedy.
You know, because, you know, I mean, it's not like I'm opposed to it. And I'll throw in some Jewish references. Like this show, I'll throw in some Jewish references.
Please.
But, you know, when I get a chance to do it for a group, I did a thing for a group of Holocaust survivors, all Jewish humor. I did a fundraiser for a temple about a month ago, all Jewish humor. But generally, you know, maybe if I was somewhere else other than Tucson, Arizona, doing fundraisers, I'd do more Jewish comedy. But
I mean,
no,
if you
were
in Brooklyn or, you know, the west side of L.A.
Exactly. Like you know, Passover is just ending. You know,
right.
That's great. I could, if I had a Jewish crowd, I'd talk about, gefilte fish. The annual tradition of passing over gefilte fish to the next person because it's not a fish. It's to a fish what McNuggets are to chicken. You don't go deep sea gefilte fishing. You know, it's I could do stuff on gefilte. I can do stuff on matz, but I just, you know, the crowd. You know, I'll talk about Hanukkah and Christmas.
Right.
And how Christmas is easier because it's just one night. And Hanukkah, it's eight nights. And your parents, when you're a little kid, they got to give you a present all eight nights. Whether you're rich or poor, they know the custom, the tradition, got to give you a present all eight nights. Well, my parents didn't have a lot of money. So I remember the first night of Hanukkah, I'm like 8 years old. I'm so excited. I open up my present and there is G.I. Joe's head. And I kind of knew what the next seven nights were bringing me. You know, I can talk about Jewish stuff. I can talk about the mixed marriages. You know, my wife's Catholic. My kids are confused. They walk around at Christmas time. They're singing Oive Maria. They don't know, you know. So, but generally, I leave the most of the Jewish humor to when I'm playing a pretty select Jewish crowd.
You know, I understand that, absolutely. By the way, rabbis all use the same jokes. So when you see rabbis get up as comedians, it's very challenging. Every now and then, a community will do a rabbis as comedy night, and I have no, it's all the same jokes.
There was a it's usually like, Jews don't eat pork unless it's in Chinese food,
right,
or
right.
Customs that
three
we have.
Three sets of dishes, milk, meat, and treif. And,
Well, and there's the reform jokes. It's like, you know, they argue about which temple is more reformed, and the first reform rabbi says, we serve food on Yom Kippur. And the second rabbi says, well, we serve ham sandwiches on Yom Kippur. And the third rabbi says, that's nothing. On Yom Kippur, we put up a sign, closed for the holidays. You know, there's
Well, then the fourth reform rabbi says, what's Yom Kippur?
That's the bracha one.
Can you say a bracha? Yeah, well, I wanted to kind of move them together.
No.
You know,
but those are like traditional. There was actually a guy, and he always advertised himself as looking like Steve Martin, and he was a rabbi, and he did a lot of comedy, and he made a good living doing that.
You know, I have to ask you this question. Do you have a favorite Jewish joke?
A favorite? Oh, I'll tell you one. And actually, I got to tell you who I heard it, who said it.
Please.
William Shatner said it.
Bill Shatner, Jewish?
Jewish.
Not so well known. Everybody knows Leonard Nimoy was Jewish.
No,
Shatner
tells a story about working in Canada, and he finally gets a part in a show, and he calls his mother and he says, Mom, I got a part in this show. I'm so excited. I play the Jewish husband. And his mom says, no. No, you don't. You tell them you want a speaking part.
Classic.
And that's a great
classic
line. That's a cute
joke.
Line.
Absolutely. I sometimes think with Jewish jokes, you should just, you know, like the old joke about the guys in the prison, you just call out number 18 and everybody
right.
laughs. How do you come up with material?
My material is by and large based on my experiences. So when I was younger, my material was based on having kids and taking birthing classes and naming my children. You know, I have to name, in, for Jews, you have to name after someone who's passed away.
So my son
is Grandpa. You know, that's what we call them. You know, you have, so you, I did all this stuff.
Come here, Zadie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just keep Bubby. Crawling. It's okay. Yeah. Bubby, come on.
So, yeah, you know, so it was always based on birthing classes or being in the delivery room or naming my kid. And then now I can't do that material because I'm too old. It doesn't work coming from me. If my son was doing comedy, he could do it. So now I do things mostly about getting older and dealing with people who are younger, dealing with younger doctors or dealing with, you know, just the whole age, getting less physically strong. And so it's based, but it's an exaggeration. Because I have to say that because my wife would say, you're telling them that stuff you're saying about me. But it's really, I don't say, she always looks good. It's very self-deprecating the way I do things.
Have to be careful about those spouse jokes.
Oh, well, especially today. You got to be careful about everything today. It's really, you know, it's very challenging today. And I'm not, you know, I agree with political correctness. I agree with not stereotyping people. I agree with all those things. But it kind of gets to an extreme where you get worried about, do I have to worry about the most, out of 100 people here, is there one person who's really sensitive, who's going to be offended? And it really is difficult. Dave Fitzsimmons is a very good friend of mine, and he's a syndicated cartoonist
and
syndicated.
Great, funny guy.
Funny guy and syndicated in hundreds of newspapers. And we walk together a lot. And we're talking about the fact that humor we would have done even a few years ago, we really have to be careful now. And he's doing more self-deprecating things because that's the one person, you know, it's safe to make fun of, that no one's going to boo you for making fun of yourself. But it's an interesting time.
You know, I it seems to me that comedians may have it the hardest because comedy is divisive almost by its nature. You're hitting on things that bother people and humorizing them, yeah. Making them funny, making them accessible in that way.
Right. Oh, I absolutely agree. You're pointing out, you know, and sometimes people don't get it. It's a joke. You know, I don't really believe that, but you know, you're trying to point out the problems. You know, Lenny Bruce was destroyed by pointing out racism by using racist words.
Right.
And it's gotten to a point where, you know, and again, like I certainly, you have to police speech in that you don't want to offend and stereotype and perpetuate stereotypes and horrible things. But if you can't poke fun at it, that's one way that you sort of deflate those, you know, racist things. I don't know. It's a challenging time right now.
Right. You know, I was watching the movie Funny People. It's an Adam Sandler, Seth Rogen movie.
Oh, yeah.
Quite good, actually, which it's hard to say that about most Adam Sandler films, but right. I agree with that. There's a shtick where James Taylor is performing for Google or something, and Adam Sandler's going to go on next and do his set, and you know, James Taylor finishes, and Seth Rogen is standing there next to him as the young up-and-coming comedian at the time he was, and he says, "Don't you ever get tired of singing Fire and Rain?" And James Taylor says, "Don't you get tired of talking about your genitals?"
Yeah. Well, an opening for musicians.
He didn't put it quite like that.
Oh, no, I get it.
Okay.
I don't know about following a musician, but I know opening.
I hope I never follow James Taylor after he sings Fire and Rain.
Can you imagine? Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah, but that's my point. Yeah, the audience never get. They're there to hear the old songs, and for comedians, it's very different.
What have you done for me lately?
I know, but opening for musicians, I opened for, this shows how long ago it was, I opened for Ricky Nelson.
Wow.
And, you know,
the traveling man.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things, you learn lessons along the way. One of the lessons you learn when you're opening for someone like that, the audience isn't there to see you, and you better, I start out every time I open for somebody else, I gush about the person they're there to see. Even if I'm not a fan of Ricky Nelson's, I got to tell the, oh my God, the ladies, he's still dreamy. Oh my God, he can still sing. But, you know, and then they like you because you're with them. Now you're okay. Because I once had a show, and I won't tell you who I opened for, and I kind of made fun of the
the headliner. Oh. And I was young. I was dumb. I was in my early or maybe mid-20s. And the audience didn't like me. And I'm such an idiot. It's like, well, they're not here to see you. Why are you making fun of them? Of course they're not going to like you. So you learn lessons
along
the way.
They paid X dollars for those tickets, right. And it wasn't to see you, Ellie.
Exactly right.
Tell us about Comedy for Charity.
Great. I'm so glad you asked, Rabbi.
Well, my pleasure, Ellie.
This is a great. I'm so proud to have a little part in this. Susie Sexton is a woman who's been really involved. She's also a lawyer, although she's retired, and her family was a victim of gun violence, and she started doing this Comedy for Charity to raise money for really good causes. I know this year, a lot of the money is going to go to Ben's Bells, which is just, there's a tsunami of kindness that starts here in Tucson with Jeanette Murray and Ben's Bells. There's going to be Send a Kid to Camp. Some of the money is going to go there, the YWCA. And this is going to be a really fun show. And it's going to be a fun show that anyone could see. The headliner, they're bringing in a gentleman named Jason Love. And you can go online and look at him. He is a very clean comedian. He works clean. He's been on Comedy Central, America's Got Talent. And then locally, I'm there, and I'll probably do about a 15-minute set. Dave Fitzsimmons, who, whether you agree with his politics or not, you have to appreciate the fact that David donates his time to every charity,
visits every
classroom, every journalism school, every school that asks. And he's got a very kind heart, and he loves our community. He's the MC. There's going to be,
And he's very funny.
He's very funny. And the Radio City Wreckettes, who are a bunch of tap dancers, are all in their 60s and up. And I mean way up.
That doesn't seem that old now.
It doesn't. It doesn't. But they're going to be there. There's going to be hip-hop there. There'll be a juggler there, in case you missed me juggling just now.
Yes, yes. Now you can see it actually with your eyes. Yeah. When is it, and how can people get tickets?
April 22nd. At the Fox Theater, the beautiful Fox Theater here in
Tucson.
Gorgeous
Fox Theater in Tucson.
It is the crown jewel of downtown Tucson. The acoustics there are great. 6 p.m. on Sunday, April 22nd. It'll be good fun for the entire family. Tickets are $25. And again, this is for charity. For $50, you get VIP tickets. There's a reception beforehand. All the comedians, Fitz will be there. I'll be there. Jason Love will be there.
So great. And people go to Fox Theater Tucson.
Fox Theater, yeah.
And look it up and look get it up. Your tickets you, and go. And you can
get
hear
it online.
And a tremendous roster of folks.
It'll be fun. Hey, thanks, Rabbi.
It is my pleasure. And I hope you have something good to do with your leftover matzah, Elliot.
All right. I'll figure. I thought, you know, when I moved here, I thought there were so many Jews here because I saw the cake with the circle around it on every corner.
Yeah,
this
the
is
circle
my town.
K. Yeah, that's right. Big gulps must be Jewish. Thanks. When we come back in a moment, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be Adam Levinson, author of the fascinating new book, The Abu Dhabi Bar Mitzvah. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning comes from Israeli singer Ishai Ribo, Achat Ulatamid, Once and For All. It's about fleeing from God. My friends, may you have a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
שוב הרגע הזה, אני אתה ויצרי, אין לי פנים להפנות יותר, גם לא תירוצים, גם לא תירוצים. והלכתי לאיבוד בתוך שוק עומי אדם, עמוק בתוך זוטה של ים, אבל אני יודע שלא תתייאש ממני לעולם. שונסתי מפניך כמו אידיוט, ברחתי להרים, בניתי מסביבי חומות, מגדלים, חדרי חדרים, חדרי חדרים. האמת אני בוש ונכלם, דבר שמפניך נעלם, אליך וקיים.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.